So just to start off with, just a quick reminder of ocular anatomy, because there are terms that I'm going to refer back to, and indeed others will refer back to later on in the talk. So what I'm showing here is a cross-section of the eye. And is this going to work? There we are. Okay, so basically the eye, in our terms, is divided into two bits. There's a bit at the front called the anterior segment, and that's in front of the lens, and then there's a bit, a much bigger bit at the back, which is everything else inside the eye, which we call the posterior segment. And that's where the jelly in the eye sits. Now, the back of the eye is lined by a layer of light-sensitive tissue called the retina, and underlying the retina is the choroid, which is basically a sort of network of blood vessels that supply the retina. And it's in the choroid that we think that this disease is actually based. There is one pathological specimen of an eye with birdshot, and that clearly shows that that's where the focus of infection is, and that's what corresponds to the little white spots that we see that help us make the diagnosis of the disease. Now, when we as ophthalmologists look into the back of the eye, we look right at the back. This structure, round structure over here on your left, is where the optic nerve comes into the back of the eye. You can see the retinal blood vessels, and this bit in the centre is what we call the macula. Now, the macula is very important because it's the bit that we see straight ahead with. It's the bit that subserves colour vision, and it's the bit that enables us to see fine print and so forth. And unfortunately, the main reason that people lose vision with birdshot is because they develop waterlogging of the back of the eye of the macula due to leakage in the retinal blood vessels. So, just to start off with some facts. Birdshot is a chronic form of intraocular inflammation. You as patients, I don't need to tell you this, but it goes on and on and on. And actually, we don't know how long it goes on for, because we haven't really recognised the disease for a particularly long time. Of course, it gives a very distinct clinical pattern, and that's how we can make that's how we diagnose the disease. And there is a very strong association with a gene called HLA-A29, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit later on. As you all know in this room, it's a rare condition. It usually comes on between the ages of 30 and 60. And in many studies, the mean age of presentation is about 53, and there is said to be a slight female preponderance. But you need to take these facts with a pinch of salt, because in a large number of cases, the disease is unrecognized for years. We think birdshot is something wrong with your body's immune system. That is the system in your body that fights off bacteria and viruses, but we really don't understand the relationship between this system and the disease. One of the questions in the sort of pre-sheet before the conference was, is birdshot associated with any other disease? But as far as we know, there is no association. There was a French study which suggested that there might be a slight increase in allergies or atopy, and some have also associated it with an increased risk of cardiovascular disease, but we don't know. And there is no known cure, although we can suppress the disease and keep people seeing. Well, how long have we known about birdshot? We think it was first described in 1949 by a chap called Francis Chetty, who called it chorioretinopathy en tache de bougie, or candle wax drippings. Subsequently, a chap called Amalric, another French ophthalmologist, described retinopathy en grain de riz, so looking like rice grains. Somebody else called it salmon patch choroidopathy. A very famous medical ophthalmologist called Don Gast described it as vitiliginous choroiditis. That is, it looked a bit like the white patches that you see in vitiligo. And eventually, two other ophthalmologists from America, Ryan and Mormony, described the condition that we now know today as birdshot retinochoroidopathy. What about the history? Well, to us, people with birdshot usually have a quiet eye. It's rarely red, it's rarely painful. So a number of conditions that cause inflammation inside the eye will make the eye go red, make it very painful, and will actually lead to a condition called photophobia. And when we look in the eye, we see minimal, if any, inflammation at the front of the eye. I've already told you it's chronic, and the reason that people get poor vision is because the retinal vessels begin to leak fluid, which they shouldn't normally, and this leads to macular waterlogging and reduction of vision. And of course, the characteristic of the disease is these cream-coloured or depigmented spots. Now, I'm going to switch now to a study that was set up in Paris in November 2002. And the doctors there recruited 80 patients with birdshot, and they've been following them up year by year. The patients were defined clinically as well as being HLA-A29 positive, and all the patients had baseline clinical features such as their colour vision, their field of vision, imaging, and also quality of life. And subsequently, there have been a number of papers reporting the results from this baseline over the years. But I think this does give us some quite useful information. So in the French studies, what were the symptoms? Well, 70% of people had blurry vision, 66% had floaters, 64% had problems in the dark, which was something that I wasn't particularly aware of and I hadn't really asked people about. About 40% had abnormal colour vision. So the patients in the room may well be aware that in the clinic we often show them the book with the coloured numbers in, and in fact the coloured numbers, I think, is quite a good way of judging how the disease is getting on. 20% describe vibrating vision. Now, I've never heard that from many of my patients, so I actually contacted the authors and I said, well, what is this vibrating vision? And they said, well, that's what patients tell us. So there we are. 20% had distorted central vision, and 13% were aware that their peripheral field of vision had been reduced. Okay? So often when the peripheral field of vision is reduced, particularly when it happens slowly, people aren't aware of it. So for 13% to be aware of it, you can be pretty sure it was quite bad. The vision findings of the French study, overall vision was worse with age. This isn't exclusive to birdshot. We see this in other conditions that cause inflammation in the eye. If you develop it later on, you tend to have worse vision. At their baseline tests, 97% of patients had symptoms, and there was a mean of 3.3 symptoms per patient, so a combination of blurred vision, floaters, abnormal colour, vibrating, whatever. Visual symptoms were common, even in the presence of good vision. So often these patients might have what we call 6/6 vision, they could see right the way down the chart, but they were aware that they had other visual symptoms. Now, what about colour vision? As I told you, in the French study, about 40% of patients had abnormal colour vision, and colour vision was abnormal in some eyes, even with good straight-ahead vision. They related colour vision loss to poor contrast sensitivity, and it seemed to them, and it seems to me, that measurement of colour vision is an extra useful test in the assessment of patients. What about the visual fields? Now, those of you who've been to the clinic will be aware that we do measure the visual fields from time to time, and there are two machines that we use for measuring visual fields. There's a thing called the Humphrey Visual Field Analyzer, which is an automatic machine, and people find very difficult to do, and we use it commonly in the clinic for patients with glaucoma, although the Americans find this is the way that they prefer to follow patients with birdshot. Goldman Visual Fields use a different machine, which is manned by an operator, and this measures the whole of the peripheral field of vision, and in my view, is a much better way of picking up defects in the peripheral visual field, which tends to happen early in disease. Birdshot is associated with a variety of visual field defects. Peripheral constriction can be a marker of long-term disease, and in the French study, they look particularly at these central blank spots around fixation. And as I said before, the automated visual field, the Humphrey field machine, could be useful in monitoring field progression, particularly centrally. The Goldman visual fields, as I said, measure your peripheral field of vision, and there has been a study of this reported from Baltimore. 55 patients were studied in America, and three quarters of them had abnormal visual fields prior to treatment, and in a number of those treatments, the rate of loss of field was slowed or reversed by treatment. So this is another way that we have of monitoring how you as patients are getting on our treatment. So here's the beast. So this is a right eye, and again, you'll remember this bit in the middle is the optic nerve with the retinal blood vessels, and the characteristic feature of birdshot is these little white spots all around the disc there. It was called birdshot because to the Americans, it looked like the pattern that you got on a barn door if you fired a shotgun at it. So that's the spread of the pellets hitting the door. How fanciful can you get? All right. Now, we do a couple of things to assess people when they come along to the clinic, and Mark will be talking a bit more about this in the next session. I will point out here that a number of you will have had a thing called fluorescein angiography. This is where we inject you into a peripheral vein with a yellow dye, and then as the dye goes through the blood vessels at the back of the eye, we do a series of photographs and basically look for pattern recognition. Now, interestingly, often in birdshot, the fluorescein angiogram is normal unless you have abnormal leakage from the blood vessels. And there is another dye test called an indocyanine green, which is, as you may imagine, a green dye, which shows up the little spots much better. And some ophthalmologists consider actually measuring the number of spots over time as a measure of how the disease is getting on. Now, this is just an example of a fluorescein angiogram shown on the screen here, showing the sort of fluffy edge around the blood vessels, particularly around the retinal veins, which indicate that the dye is getting out of the vessels. So this is what we call vessel leakage. And if it goes on, it can affect the macula here, and as I say, reduce your vision. So in birdshot, how do we as ophthalmologists make the diagnosis? Well, first of all, we go on the clinical features, and they are usually fairly characteristic, but not always. There have been reports of patients with birdshot having no spots at all to start with and then developing them over years. And that, of course, will lead to a delay in the diagnosis. We like to confirm the diagnosis by doing this blood test looking for the gene HLA-A29. And I'll talk about that in a second. We try to assess colour vision using the book with the coloured numbers. We do the visual fields, and then we do various tests such as the fluorescein angiogram that I've talked about already, the indocyanine green test, and the electrophysiological test, which again Mark will be talking about in a second. Okay, well, a lot of you may have wondered is what is this thing, HLA-A29? HLA stands for human leukocyte antigen. And it refers, genetically, to a region on the chromosome of a person where the genes involved in the immune response are located. And in humans, it's on chromosome 6. And these genes are divided into two classes. There's class 1 and class 2. And the class 1 are designated A, B, and C, and class 2, D, R, D, Q, etc. Now, class 1 genes produce a protein, a molecule, that when it's linked to a bit of a protein from an invading bacteria or virus, notify to the immune system that that cell is infected and say, hello immune system, come and do something about this. I've got an infection on board. The problem is that class 1 molecules are present on every nucleated cell in our bodies. So, how can, if this is a link between the immune system going a bit mad and attacking the tissues of the eye, why doesn't it attack anywhere else? And I'm afraid we don't know the answer to that. Interestingly, there are a number of strong class 1 associations with other so-called autoimmune diseases. So, for instance, there is a disease called ankylosing spondylitis that causes inflammation of the spine, and that's very strongly linked to another HLA called B27. The same argument applies. Why should it affect the spine and indeed the eyes when you have these class 1 genes everywhere on the body? Of great interest to us, however, is that HLA-A29 and birdshot is one of the strongest gene associations known in medicine. So the risk, if you are HLA-A29 positive, is about 300 times greater than if you are HLA-A29 negative. But of course, these genes are passed down in families, and not all families with birdshot all get the disease. So there must be other modifying factors. And hopefully, as part of the research that we're planning, we're actually going to look specifically at that. All right, the bad bit, the prognosis. There is little doubt, as you all know, that there is loss of vision with time. You can go on the internet, you can find out these facts. It doesn't just include straight-ahead vision, it includes colour vision and field vision, as well as vision needed for reading and driving. As a general rule, poor vision at presentation predicts poor vision at 5 and 10 years, but do remember that 3/4 of patients have vision of better than 6/12, that's driving vision, at the end of follow-up in various different studies. So you have to take these studies with a pinch of salt, because of course the bad patients tend to be the ones who are retained in the clinic and are the ones who tend to get reported. Visual loss is gradual. Occasionally, the disease can go through a relapsing and remitting course, gets very bad one day, calms down a bit the next day, and so forth. There has been a Dutch study, of 55 patients, where they looked at patients over 5 and 10 years. The number of legally blind eyes increased from 8% at onset to 30% at 5 years and 40% at 10 years. And this is despite modern immunosuppressive treatment. The main cause for loss of vision is disease affecting the macula. So first of all, you get waterlogging of the macula, and that's something that we as ophthalmologists can do something about with our nasty drugs. But after that, you get what's called macular atrophy, which is a bit like age-related macular degeneration. The cells basically start to give up. It doesn't mean you go completely blind, it just means you lose your central vision, but hopefully still have some peripheral field. Finally, quality of life. Well, I don't need to tell you as patients that it's a pretty miserable disease to have. There is no doubt birdshot reduces quality of life. The reduction of quality of life in the French study was mainly related to your best acuity, to night blindness, and to reduction in the field of vision. However, it is still possible, and we certainly know this, to have a poor quality of life even if you've got 6/6 vision in both eyes. But this quality of life reduction, in fact, is very similar to what we see in other forms of chronic inflammation in the eye, so patients with other forms of the inflammation. So I'm going to finish up with what we don't know. And there's a lot we don't know about birdshot chorioretinopathy. We don't know why people get it. We don't know what's the best way of monitoring it. We don't know what's the best treatment. And actually, we don't really know what's the best term outcome. And hopefully with this impetus that we've had with the birdshot, this birdshot day, we can start to put together some research programs where we can begin to answer these questions. Thank you very much.